A once-in-a-century pandemic, COVID-19. It came into our lives out of nowhere nearly 2 years ago. That virus has since claimed more than 5 million lives around the world, including 760,000 Americans. It has sickened hundreds of millions of people. And for many dark months, it felt like there was little, if anything, we could do about it. But as we struggled to get through the first year of the pandemic, there was a race going on in the labs of the world's boldest scientists, researchers who felt they could save millions of lives if only they could develop a shot to save the world. And that's the title of a book that has kept me from getting a good night's sleep this past week, A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for a COVID-19 vaccine. I'm delighted to welcome its author, investigative reporter and Wall Street Journal writer, Gregory Zuckerman. Greg, welcome to Frank Buckley Interviews, and thanks for ruining my sleep this week.
Hopefully there was some entertainment along the way.
Absolutely. I was going to say, your book is nonfiction. It's just great reporting, but you've written it as a fast-paced thriller, as these scientists and doctors are literally trying to save the world, and these companies that are backing them have everything at stake. And I think the first thing that struck me was that the scientists who saved the world got it immediately, as we were just wrapping our heads around the fact that this was not SARS, it was not MERS, COVID was going to affect us in a profound way. These scientists were way ahead of us. They knew almost immediately that COVID-19 was going to be a pandemic. Can you set the scene for our viewers and our listeners with regard to the urgency that they understood that we didn't?
Yeah, and it's a really good point, Frank. I was flying around the world in January of 2020, and the characters I write about in my book weren't. They were getting scared when we were kind of blasé about it. Stefan Bancel, a fascinating character, in his own right. He runs this company, Moderna. For years, people accused him of exaggerating his company's abilities. They were working on mRNA. We can get into what that is, but they were perfecting a new approach to vaccines. He was in the south of France on vacation, January 2020. And for years, he had pushed his people hard. They were collapsing at the office, hitting their heads against desks, trying to keep up with them. He always wanted to be the one to try to step up during a pandemic, during a crisis. And here he was, January 2020, getting a little hint, a little glimpse, a sense that maybe there was something bad coming. And he said, guys, we're going to be the ones. We're going to focus. We're going to put this vaccine together. So did a company I write about, BioNTech in Germany. And right, when we were a little bit kind of complacent about this virus, they were saying, we're going to put this vaccine together, try to save the world.
Yeah, they were rushing in, and the scientists were rushing into their labs on the weekend and trying to immediately, as soon as they could sequence the virus, they had approaches to attack it.
Yeah, so basically for years, they on these approaches, they're revolutionary. Historically, the way we make vaccines is you put a little piece of the virus, the pathogen, in a vaccine. You kill it, you weaken it. And these really kind of rebellious, stubborn, quirky, as you know from the book, they're a little bit odd, they're very competitive, they're neurotic, they're ambitious, but there's some people that are quite difficult in the book. They had a different idea, they had a different approach. They said, we're going to try to create, send a message into the body. That's what mRNA is. The M is messenger RNA, it's a molecule. We're going to create it in the laboratory, send a message to the body, do it a whole different way. And they ignore the experts who kind of said, don't waste your time with this kind of thing. And yeah, in early 2020, they threw themselves into the effort.
And you speak to this, you just mentioned this a moment ago, but essentially, I got the sense that not only were the entrepreneurs behind Moderna and companies like that, but it was the scientists who were sort of, for lack of a better word, fringe characters in academia. They people said, oh yeah, we see your published work, it's interesting, but they weren't embraced. Some of them didn't even have tenure.
Yeah, these are outsiders. These are very unlikely characters. You would have thought the people that would save us would be the vaccine giants. And that's Merck, Sanofi in Europe, GSK. They're the ones that make like the MMR vaccine that we give to our kids, et cetera, measles, mumps, and rubella. It wasn't those characters. It was people that had never before created anything, any drug, any vaccine. And I don't say this to get people nervous in any way. They had been working on these approaches for decades, really. In some ways, it's very reassuring. It wasn't overnight that they threw this thing together. It's just that it was below the radar screen, outside the limelight, away from the limelight. These were characters that believed in a new approach. And as you say, they're very unlikely characters. They're odd in some ways, unusual, neurotic, competitive, stubborn, resilient. I admire them. I learned a lot from them myself.
Of those characters, and you have many in this book, but who are the ones that sort of stick with you, who you think that person must feel, and maybe you've talked to them about it, so validated after, you know, putting their life's work into this concept of messaging the body, that it has not only paid off, but it has saved millions of lives?
Yes, it really has. And I don't think we appreciate these vaccines enough. They've become politicized. We're too close to the situation. But these are science's great, modern science's greatest achievement. You talk about interesting characters. I mean, Ugur Sahin, he runs this company, BioNTech. They're the ones that partnered with Pfizer, but they're really the ones who developed this vaccine that many of us have, the Pfizer vaccine. And he's an interesting character. He's a cancer researcher. He really focused on infectious diseases his whole life. It was all about this belief in the immune system. He and his wife, Aslam Tureki, they're a couple. They run this company. Today, they're billionaires, but they still live in a little apartment in Mainz, Germany, not even a major city there. He doesn't own a car. He doesn't own a television. He bikes to work. He schleps like piles and piles of scientific papers on vacations with his wife. They take computers with them, lug big, huge computers on these vacations with them. And they were dedicated to developing this mRNA, developing ways to awaken the immune system and fight off cancer. It hasn't really worked for cancer, but they turned on a dime early 2020. They became scared. They became convinced there was a pandemic coming and they wanted to be the ones to save the world. So they're very unlikely characters in a lot of ways.
Are there other people who stand out to you who, if not for the development of these vaccines, would have been lost to history, but now will be recorded in history as people who saved us?
Yeah, there are all kinds of fascinating, unlikely characters. There's a gentleman I write about in my book, Adrian Hill, who is at Oxford University, and he's partly responsible for the AstraZeneca vaccine that is all over the world, very effective and very helpful. He's probably the most disliked or among the most disliked members of the world of science. He gets up at conferences and just rips into colleagues, very critical, takes people aback in his ferocious criticism. He's just really difficult person. And yet he was determined to develop this approach. There's a guy in Boston named Dan Baruch who's been working in HIV for decades, It hasn't worked for HIV. He's got resilience, persistence. It hasn't worked again, but he's shifted gears and he focused on COVID. And that's the J&J vaccine. There are people within Moderna, really interesting characters, a guy named Juan Andres, who is a manufacturing expert. Early in 2020, he became scared about the future, scared about the pandemic. He told his own family, let's buy toilet paper, let's buy tissues. He bought a third refrigerator for food to store up. They thought he was nuts. They thought he was crazy. They were like rolling their eyes. A month later, his mother-in-law died of COVID. And like the rest of us, the family became serious about it. There are all kinds of really interesting, dedicated, unlikely characters that I thought pretty fascinating in my research.
I was struck by how there was such resistance to biotechnologies like mRNA. And I wondered, as you did your research, did you get a sense of why the mainstream of science sort of, it seems like a repeating theme throughout history, not just with this vaccine, but the mainstream of science will often take a long time to catch up to bold thinkers like the people who are developing these biotechnologies?
That's exactly right, but there's reason why people resisted using mRNA. mRNA is a molecule. We have it inside us naturally. It basically transports instructions from DNA to the part of the cell where proteins are created. And it was always the dream of scientists to create mRNA in the lab because you can send instructions to the body and you can tell the body to make any kind of protein, which means you can make any kind of vaccine or drug, almost make your body into a vaccine factory. So it was always the dream, but
people didn't really want to spend too much time on it because mRNA gets chopped up within moments by the body's enzymes. And, you know, anti-vaxxers say, well, mRNA is going to change my DNA. It's going to, no, it doesn't do any of that. And that's why people didn't even want to work with it for decades, because it gets eliminated by the body so quickly. So just like that's one reason not to worry about the risk of these vaccines, it was a big reason why scientists didn't want to work with mRNA. And it took some stubborn iconoclastic scientists who said, yeah, I know there are all these issues with mRNA and I know it doesn't last long, but what if we could figure out a way to get it into the body and make proteins kind of quickly, then it'll disappear. In some ways, it's the perfect vaccine because it doesn't last long and there's no danger to it.
That is a fascinating thought that I think most of us have not considered. Is that why we have to get boosted, that after 6 months, we're having to have a booster?
No, that's why these mRNA vaccines actually have to be kept in cold temperatures because they're very unstable. The booster just means after 6 months or so, the antibodies wane. But frankly, you still have good protection. We're trying to be careful. We're trying to really be on top of this pandemic and get ahead of it. I haven't been boosted yet. It's been over 6 months. I probably will at one point. And listen, the virus is changing. It's morphing. It's got these strains. Delta is one of them. There'll probably be more of them. So we're probably going to have to adjust these vaccines. But frankly, I think we're going to get to the point where you go into the doctor's office maybe once a year, and yeah, you get a COVID vaccine, but you roll it up into an all-in-one with maybe the flu vaccine too. Maybe they throw something else in there. There are second and third generation vaccines that are coming that I'm really excited about. So yes, we're going to have to be on top of this thing and maybe adjust these vaccines, but that's fine. We can adjust it and make it and improve it along the way.
You talk about the rapid development of these vaccines. And in fact, one of the things you hear, and we'll get into hesitancy in a few moments, but this idea that the vaccines were developed effectively in a year, that they were available to some people within just over a year of the starting gun, as it were. Some people have said, well, that means that they must not be safe. Can you speak to that?
So I enjoy talking to those who are vaccine hesitant, largely because it's not the goal of my book, but I think you come away from my book reassured, at least I was, that these approaches were not done overnight. They didn't cut corners last year. They didn't hurry unnecessarily. There's a dramatic chase that went on last year, but there was also remarkable research that went on for years. And I think when you're aware of it and the extent of the efforts and the dedication, the apoliticization of it, I think you're reassured.
So many of us felt reassured ourselves when we finally were able to get shots in arms, protecting ourselves, protecting our loved ones, protecting our communities. For the researchers, the scientists, when they were in the lab and they were doing the clinical studies, were there eureka moments for them like, yes, this does work?
There were a lot of eureka moments, but I look at it a little bit like a relay race kind of thing, where a group or an individual deep in a lab somewhere in Wisconsin or Cambridge, Massachusetts or Maryland or even Mainz, Germany, they make an advance, they get all excited about it, they think they've really figured everything out, and then they stumble, they hit a roadblock. So they make a little bit of an improvement in advance, and then they fall, and they have to pass the baton to the next runner, and they do a lap or two and make some advance, and then they too fall. So it's a series of falls, of obstacles overcome, and then they pass the baton to other researchers along the way.
There was so much at stake, not just for these researchers, but for the companies involved. How close were some of them to going under before they made progress?
So that was really striking to me as I did my research. I didn't realize it. I don't think many people did. But Moderna was very close to not being able to pull off a vaccine. As recently as May 2020, they were running out of money. And they were a company that people always had doubts about, skepticism, even suspicion about, because they always said, this Stefan Bancel is a salesman, a little bit of a Elizabeth Holmes kind of character, some viewed going into this crisis, and some dismissed them. And it was hard for them to raise money. And as recently as I said, in May 2020, they were running out of money. And it wasn't clear they could get it. They went to the government, they went to Merck, they went to Gates Foundation. They couldn't get the money they needed to produce these vaccines. They lucked out. They went to Wall Street, they raised enough money. But we have to be very appreciative and grateful. And even BioNTech, they had a trouble at first convincing Pfizer to get on board. They eventually did. But we could easily have been in a situation where these vaccines weren't ready, where we couldn't produce enough of the shots. So we have to be very grateful and appreciative that they were able to overcome these kind of dramatic difficulties.
Indeed, because the COVID-19 vaccine is saving millions of lives, but millions of people are not only not taking it, they're actively raising doubts about it. How do these researchers feel about that? We're going to take a short break. We'll discuss with Gregory Zuckerman when we come back.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We don't know what the long-term effects of these are. There's still clinical trials going on through 2023. So to just like when people just say, oh, just get the jab. Well, first of all, everybody's body is different, number one. And second of all, there's a lot of things we don't know about this.
And that's NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers explaining why he decided against getting a COVID vaccination. He's just one of millions of Americans who have cited skepticism over the vaccine's long-term safety as their reason for not getting a shot. Welcome back to Frank Buckley Interviews. I want to get back to our conversation with investigative journalist and writer Gregory Zuckerman. He's the author of the new book, A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for a COVID vaccine. Greg, I want to ask you about what you just heard from Aaron Rodgers. We hear that from people like him. And I've heard some experts and scientists and doctors say it's so dangerous when someone like an Aaron Rodgers says something like that. What are your thoughts on that?
It's distressing in some ways. Listen, people like Aaron Rodgers and others are quite reasonable, and they make some of the points he makes are based on facts. We don't know for sure about the risks with these vaccines. But, you know, when I take a ride, there are risks involved as well when I get in my car. And we are very clear. We do know that the risks are limited. They're minimal for most people with all of these vaccines. And frankly, in my reporting for my book, I've talked to a lot of people with long COVID who are healthy, thin people, and they're still struggling. Their brain's foggy. They're lethargic over a year after getting the virus. You don't want to get this virus if you can avoid it. Will most people be fine? For sure. But there's that percentage that won't. And obviously, those who are hospitalized and even face death. So are there? Is it the case that it's a new vaccine? Well, yeah, mRNA has never been proven until 2020 for either a vaccine or a drug. But over the past year, a billion people have received these vaccines. They're really safe. We see them all over the world, not just in the United States. So to dismiss them, to be a public figure, to be as skeptical as some people are, it can be dangerous.
And Aaron Rodgers is one thing, you know, he talks about being an independent thinker, and that's why he's holding off. There are others who seem much more cynical, who are taking advantage of having the vaccine, experiencing the safety and protection of the vaccine. I'm talking about the Tucker Carlsons of this world. And at the same time, raising questions about vaccines, it seems, for ratings and to stoke anger. I just wonder if you have a thought about that, and if the people you've been writing about have a thought about that.
Yeah, I spent over a year, close to 2 years, talking to the researchers responsible for these approaches, mRNA, the adenovirus one, which has led to the J&J vaccine. A lot of these people have spent 24/7 almost over the past years on these approaches. I know some who are cancer, deal with cancer. They come into the office. They believe in helping mankind. Do they want to be rich and famous too? Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. But they do want to help, and they're dedicated, and they're not political. There are Republicans, there are Democrats, there are independents in these labs. They're all about trying to help. So it's distressing to those kinds of people who've worked so hard and beat themselves up sometimes for not producing more vaccines. And then there are people that are eligible, could be taking these vaccines, and yet are still hesitant. Again, there are people that legitimately have concerns, and I hope they read my book and are reassured in that these weren't overnight sensations. But other people, I don't want to talk names in particular, everything's been politicized in our society, sadly.
Yeah. Speaking of politicized, President Trump is the one who ultimately authorized Operation Warp Speed. Does he deserve credit for doing that?
I think he does. The Trump administration downplayed the virus early on. The rollout of the vaccines was not smooth. Subsequently, the president could have, I think, embraced vaccines much more. He could have said, these are my vaccines. Everyone should be taking them. That would have helped a lot. But the Trump administration should get credit for Operation Warp Speed. It's not because of Warp Speed that we have these vaccines. I think I make that clear in my book. But the money that they allocated was very helpful, the resources, supplies, and otherwise. So we have to give credit there as well.
And just to be clear and to put a punctuation mark on this, because you said earlier a moment ago that, yes, there are questions or something to that effect about that we don't know everything about these vaccines, so that we don't know for sure, you know, whether there might be some sort of side effects or whatever coming down the line. Can you clarify that just so I'm clear on, because you've been right in the middle of this, is there anything we should worry about? Is there something that, you know, 2 years from now we're going to say, oh, gosh, we shouldn't have done this?
Listen, there are no certainties in life. I can't guarantee anything. Again, you know, you take any kind of drug or medicine or surgery, there's some percentage that's of risk involved. But we are very clear. We are very certain in terms of the science till now, and that it's such minimal risk in terms of most people, almost everybody. And down the line, who can predict the future? But there's no reason to think that in a year or two, something's going to evolve, some new side effect that's dangerous. We have no reason to think that right now.
We talked about the risks that these companies took on to develop these vaccines. Now they are benefiting in financially, of course, because they have succeeded. Is there some sort of moral question there about, yes, they've developed a life-saving vaccine, but how much they should profit from this? Are there questions like that amongst the research community? And do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, there are questions that can be raised. It's not for me to answer those questions. I do know that these researchers spent years and years working on these approaches, and we want to create incentives in society. I'm a capitalist. I think it's something to be said for giving people reason and to be rewarded, and that's okay. The question is, you know, at some point, maybe is it too much, or now that you're sitting on billions and billions of profits, could they be cutting prices, let's say? But they're not expensive vaccines necessarily. And I do have to say that these companies, these researchers that I write about, they're taking these billions. And yes, some of them are wealthy, but they're pedals to the metal on new things, cancer, AIDS, malaria. I can go on and on. Other kinds of autoimmune diseases, maybe just like we turned on the immune system, maybe we can turn it off for things like lupus and MS. So I'm really excited that we've entered this new era where these same researchers that have kind of blazed this new path for these new vaccine approaches are going to go solve some new maladies and illnesses. So that gives me reason for hope and for optimism about the future.
All right. Indeed it does. We're going to take one more short break. And we will come back with investigative reporter and Wall Street Journal writer Gregory Zuckerman.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we're back with Gregory Zuckerman of the Wall Street Journal. I want to ask you about a concept you touch on in your new book, which is, how will this pandemic, this era of science, be remembered?
So there is a possibility it will be remembered as an era in which people ignored science, or too many people ignored science and ignored even what their own internists are recommending and choosing their own ways to deal with the pandemic. But I'm an optimist by nature, and I like to think that we're going to look back and see the revolution that's been created and appreciated. And these are new methods. mRNA is a relatively new method, and it's an effective method. And just like we've seen the success with COVID, people are turning and they're optimistic about the future and all kinds of new approaches that they can apply to other kinds of diseases. So we might look back and see this as an era where it was a new age had begun of vaccine and drug development that benefits mankind.
And to that end, when you talk about the speed with which these vaccines were developed, I think, you know, because we live in this era of instant gratification, we think, okay, a year, that was a reasonable amount of time. The historic nature of the blazing speed with which these vaccines were developed, I would imagine that's something that we're all going to look back and go, wow, that was quite an accomplishment.
It's a remarkable accomplishment. Until last year, the average vaccine took 10 years to develop. The fastest one, mumps, was 4 years. And what's just as much surprising is it wasn't the vaccine giants that produced it. It's a bunch of unlikely, really overlooked scientists and companies and executives, people that were in doubt until 2020. So it's not just the speed, it's the effectiveness, it's the protection that we're getting, and it's the people responsible for these modern day miracles. It's all pretty surprising stuff and kind of dramatic as well.
Less than a minute left, but I just want to ask you, after writing about this, after soaking in this material and being with these people who are at the front lines since the beginning, has your view of the pandemic and our response to it changed?
Well, it is reassuring, the story, at least for me, that these researchers are dedicated in little labs we've never heard of that are deep in basements and all over this country and elsewhere. They're dedicated to our health, and they're trying to help us. And they're moving on to the next illness and disease. So it's changed my view on science, on technology. This is all a story of new technology, but also finance. It's a story of investors backing unproven approaches, and it gives me some optimism about the future as well.
Will we ever be free of this, of COVID?
So I'm going to give you the bad news and the good news. The bad news is I don't think this coronavirus is going away. We're stuck with it forever, probably, for a lot of reasons, partly because you've got parts of the world and parts of this country which are not vaccinated, so the virus, as a result, is going to kind of keep morphing, changing, and also just the fact that it's going to be endemic, meaning it's always going to always affect us. But I don't think it's going to be the thing where it's going to hospitalize us. We've got these vaccines. We've got more new drugs that are coming. We already have 4 coronaviruses in society, in civilization, which make us cold, give us colds, the common cold. So this will also make maybe once in a while you get this coronavirus. Maybe you have to deal with it, get some medicine, and you runny nose, that kind of thing. But it's not going to be the danger that as lethal as it is today. So that's a reason for optimism.
And another reason for optimism, and you touched on this earlier, was this idea that this race to develop these biotechnologies may help people who suffer from other diseases. I have a son who has type 1 diabetes. And our dream has always been stem cells, something to address the issue that makes his pancreas unable to produce insulin. Are those of us who have those kinds of diseases, conditions, Will we see change in our lifetime as a result of all the research and technology developed to fight COVID?
So I'm a little cautious just because until now, mRNA and the adenovirus approaches have only been used for things like COVID, and there's an approach for malaria, which I think is coming, and a couple of other viruses. But I know these researchers. I've spent over a year talking to them. They are not slowing down. They're taking these billions that they've made, and they're approaching all kinds of different illnesses, diseases, new viruses, and I would not count them out. These guys are really, and women, are really dedicated, and they are innovative. They're creative. This is where it's really been reassuring about America, about broader society as well, how innovative they are. They're entrepreneurial, these people. So I would not bet against them. So I'm really optimistic to see what they can come up with.
Well, it's a terrific book, and Gregory, we thank you very much for it.
Thank you for taking the time as well.
Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll do it today. It's free, of course, and it'll ensure that you won't miss a single episode of our podcast, which drops every week on Wednesday. You can also see our interviews on KTLA on the weekends and on YouTube. As always, thanks for sharing us on social media with your friends. Tag me when you do. I'm Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram. Thanks for listening, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.